This is Second Look, only on 103.3 WZND. Here to take a second look at the stories the WZND Newsroom has covered this week. Investigative reporting from the award-winning WZND News Team, here for you. Unbiased, engaging, and comprehensive. Second Look starts now.
Hello and welcome to the first episode of Second Look of the Year. I'm Rachel Deerfield.
And I'm Caitlin Wittes. Today we'll be discussing the sports communications major offered at ISU, a counter-protest in Bloomington, and ISU sports highlights. Local pet rescue, Clover's Cat Club, partnered with Bob's Bay Books for a nonprofit share day. Last week, I spoke to Paige Savita, the executive director of Clover's, to discuss the cat's visit to Bob's Bay Books and how the event has affected the rescue. Can you tell me a bit about Clover's Cat Club?
Yeah, so we started in late October of 2024 as a foster-based cat rescue. I've been doing cat rescue for the past like 5 years or so and felt like Bloomington Normal needed a rescue dedicated to cats. So we started in 2024, right at the end. We did 18 adoptions in 2024. Since that time, we've now done almost 250 adoptions. We moved into a space maybe 2 months ago, and we kind of run Clover's. I mean, we're first and foremost a rescue, but we focus on cats from central Illinois. We focus on like medical cases or harder to place cats, and we run our rescue kind of like, picture if a cat cafe and an animal shelter had a baby. That's Clover's Cat Club. So like the spaces are kind of more like living room spaces for the cats to be in. There aren't really cages around. We just kind of encourage the cats to be themselves and feel comfortable while they're waiting for their forever home. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's awesome. So what did the event with Bob's Bay Books look like, and how did you plan it?
So the person that owns Bob's Bay is actually adopted a cat from us. And so she let us know that they do like fundraiser days. And so like we emailed back and forth a little bit, but they do on their website have the ability for people to like that have nonprofits or charities to like apply to have a day, like a profit share day for them. So we just kind of went back and forth with her. It was really super easy to plan. And we said, you know, if you want, like we could bring cats with us too. And she was super open to that. So really we were just given our date and she, you know, emailed us and let us know kind of availability wise. I went in the day before just to check the amount of space that there would be. Like I'd been to Bob's Bay before, but not with like the eyes of like, would a cat condo fit here, you know? And so, I mean, honestly, it was super easy. We just went in and set up at 10 o'clock that day. And then we had offered to have someone stay there through the day, but the store owner was like, oh, no, like I can take care of cats too. So we just kind of had people pop in a couple of times throughout the day to like make sure that the cats didn't need litter boxes, you know, changed over, things like that. And then we just tore down at the end of the day when they were closed. So it was super, super easy. Honestly, I feel like Bob's Bay made it really easy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what would you say the goal and the outcome of the event was?
So they do the profit share days. I think they do them every Tuesday. So they share like $1 of every $10 spent with the nonprofit. So we'll get a check that will be a donation that will be helpful. But for me, that was not the goal of the day, even though that seems to kind of be the goal of the day for Bob's Bay just generally for their Tuesdays. But for me, I was just hopeful about like having people interact with cats and getting our name out there a little bit more. Honestly, we talked at the end of the day and I was like, if you know, even without doing a profit share day, if you want to do days where cats are here, we would be happy to make that happen because it seemed like customers really liked it. So the goal was just to have the community interact with cats and to learn that Clover's Cat Club exists in my mind. And then it was a nice bonus that we got a donation at the end of the day as well.
And then how would you say that adoption events like this help get more pets adopted?
So I'll be honest, it's like hard to kind of put a value on because I feel like a lot of rescues in our area really focus on dog adoptions in the community. And there's no real there's not like a great way to do cat adoptions in the community, if that makes sense, right? Like, you're not putting a cat on a leash generally and walking them around a store, right? So events like this have not been great, like, adoption events for us. However, they have brought a lot of people into Clovers. So it's hard because I don't know. We haven't seen, like, a lot of adoptions happen, like, at a Bob's Bay event. But we have so many more eyes on us. Just being involved in the community, I think, has driven our adoption numbers up, if that makes sense. So, but for me, it's so worth it to do things like that, just because even if it didn't drive our adoption numbers up, one of the things that we really like at Clovers is to encourage animals and people to be together. And so I feel like it's doing good for the community as well to, like, give people the kind of outlet to be able to spend time with cats when, you know, they wouldn't normally get to. And the nice thing about, like, a Bob's Bay event specifically is it's quieter, right? So a lot of the adoption events that you see in town, out in the community, are at, like, pet stores, which are, like, really big and really loud. And the nice thing about a small business is that people actually get to interact with the cats in a meaningful way because the cats aren't stressed out. I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, no, totally. And then, why do you think that people should want to attend these events?
That's a good question. I think, personally, cats from our community that are unhoused are a part of our community. And I think that as a community, we should be taking care of them. I'm obviously really passionate about that, but I think a lot of people just kind of forget that animals in our community that are unhoused are even there. So I think events like this are really, really good for bringing attention to something going on within our community that we all care about. And I think that events like this are really special because we get to interact with the animals and we get to have eyes on a small business in town that's doing good work. So I think that as a community, when you see small businesses kind of, like, gathering, trying to work together, we should support that, regardless of if it's an animal shelter or a bookstore or whatever it is. It's kind of like a farmer's market, you know what I mean? I feel like we should be supporting the, like, little guy in our community, and I feel like Clovers and Bob's Bay are both the little guy.
As a result of the event, Clovers has gained more traction to further their mission of finding cats their forever home.
The Director of Equity, Diversity, Inclusion, and Student Success, Brandon Delk, spoke on the details of the College of Engineering. Delk discussed how the idea first came to be and where the project is now.
Can you tell me a little bit about who you are and your position within, like, the College of Engineering as a whole?
I'm the Director of Equity, Diversity, Inclusion, and Student Success. Mm-hmm. So my job involves many things, including the recruitment efforts of the college, and also, now that we have our students, what our student engagement and retention efforts will be in terms of overseeing academic advising, making sure they have different tutoring support resources, mm-hmm. making sure they're connected to the resources off campus, also just making sure they have that sense of belonging, whether that is through targeted programming that we have, or, you know, just being present and visible in the space that we have here for students to come by and just talk about their day, or, you know, their concerns that they may have, their courses or student organizations that we're looking to launch on campus. So just kind of be that sounding board for them is definitely something that my role and then my academic advisor, Karen Huseman, you know, we're kind of this one unit here mm-hmm. to support their success, support their engineering identities, and them feeling like a part of the college, but then also university as a whole. And so, and then, yeah, just, you know, ensuring they graduate and then, you know, seeing them up afterwards, like, hey, do you want to contribute?
With the engineering program, when did, like, talk of that kind of start? Because I know it's relatively new.
Yeah, so in terms of when all this occurred, like, you know, I think early discussions kind of happened, like, 2016, you know.
Okay.
Probably, yeah. You know, in a small group with then-President Dietz, and they established a task force to kind of do some environmental scans to kind of determine the feasibility of even having, you know, engineering programs. And then we got to 2020, like, we officially had a consulting firm, you know, working with a committee of faculty and staff and facilities and whatnot, trying to determine, like, you know, what be the best programs to first launch and, you know, all that, kind of basically kind of develop plans to present to Academic Senate and get Board of Trustee approval, and so that we can move forward getting approval from the Illinois State Board of Higher Education. So 2022, 2021, kind of when all those things got tightened up as far as having official proposals. And then by 2022, we got approval from the Illinois State Board of Higher Education for mechanical, electrical, and general engineering. And then April 2023, Dean Kaiser arrived and kind of took the reins from there and, you know, started hiring our chairs and our faculty and then myself from, I used to be in admissions, so that's kind of where I've been. I've been here since 2015, and so I was in admissions prior to that. Maybe 10 years, two or three weeks, officially.
Congratulations.
Yeah, so just being in admissions and being on the road in presentations on campus, you know, there were always students who were like, oh, you have engineering, right? And I was like, no, we don't. Mm-hmm. And so you can kind of feel anecdotally those missed opportunities. And so it was nice to know that at that time, there were conversations being taken place about how we really need this for the future, because that's kind of where we're going in regards to what students are demanding, what they're looking for. Also, the demands of just the nation as well in terms of the need for engineers. And so I think the university is very forward thinking and, you know, having this almost 10-year plan to get this launched. So
the Illinois State Board of Higher Education has approved ISU for offering bachelor's degrees in electrical, mechanical, and general engineering. Despite the College of Engineering still being built, ISU is accepting the first group of students this fall. We will be right back with more stories on Second Look.
News now on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to Second Look on WZND. In case you missed it, so far we've talked about Clover's Cat Club's event with Bob's Bay Books, and an update on the College of Engineering. Normal is set to start the Pedestrian and Roadway Campus Safety Initiative. The project aims to help with road safety by increasing visibility and improving walking and cycling lanes. WZND's June Delahunty spoke with Ryan Otto, Normal's Public Works and Engineering Director, to discuss the initiative.
Could you give me a bit of an overview of the general purpose of this new Pedestrian and Roadway Safety Initiative?
Yes. So the purpose of the Pedestrian Roadway Campus Safety Initiative is to assess safety, transportation safety on the ISU campus. We have experienced a significant number of high injury crashes involving pedestrians in the last few years, and unfortunately at least one fatality. And so we endeavor to understand the areas that have safety concerns and also learn from the student body and the community as a whole where those concerns are at. So with that, we embarked on a process to talk to the campus community and the town community as a whole with public engagement. We had an online survey as well as some interactive times out on the quad to talk to the campus, and we learned a lot. We learned about areas where we didn't necessarily have a lot of crashes, but areas where students had a lot of concerns. So overall, we hope to improve the walking and biking experience as well as the driving experience to make it safer for everybody as they pass through and come to campus.
Lovely. And then I was looking at sort of the press release and the data provided and saw, do y'all have a number of start dates laid out for these projects? When do you expect them to all be wrapped up by?
The projects themselves will vary in length. Our first project, the first pilot project that we're going to install, will be at College School in Mulberry. That is the College Avenue couplet of College and Mulberry right at School Street, just west of Hewitt, Manchester. That project will go on the ground or be installed on September 3rd. And that pilot will primarily last most of the semester. We're looking to take that time, fall semester, to assess how the improvements work in terms of traffic flow, pedestrian accessibility, and we'll learn from that. So that project will last a whole semester. Some projects will only be a single day. We're going to do a bike lane on College Avenue, which essentially will connect the college campus quad area with Constitution Trail in Uptown. So part of College Avenue will be closed down to allow for two-way bike traffic on College Avenue all the way down to Constitution Trail and Constitution Trail Boulevard. That'll be a single day. today, and we'll use that time to assess how things are working and a need is for a potential future connection through that corridor. So the timing varies. Did want to highlight that school college Mulberry installation that will also have a community event on the 4th. So on the 4th, we'll have staff and information out in that area just west of Hewitt Manchester for folks to give input, experience the closed area on School Street, and just provide some feedback to the project team.
You mentioned the School Street as a pilot project. Are there plans to maybe start more projects like this if these all go well?
Yes. If projects go well, we have 7 locations in all that we're going to do pilot projects, including, I mentioned, the College School of Mulberry, but also Buford and Fell and Buford and Broadway. We'll be doing some curb extensions there as well as some crosswalk highlights, so putting some color visibility enhancements to crosswalks on University Street between Dale and a campus rec center. So all those private projects, we do hope to, you know, glean how they work, but also if they work well, apply those throughout the community going forward.
The project has start dates set for September, with times of construction varying. The initiative is expected to improve safety and efficiency.
With the recent uptick in interest of people pursuing careers in sports, WZND's Quinn Flavin spoke to Amy Miller-Ott, the director of the School of Communication, where she breaks down what the major looks like for students.
How many students are in the new sports comm major?
So I checked with the advisors today. They said, as of today, we have 68 students who either have their first, like their primary major or their secondary major in sports communication. So 68, and that includes freshmen and also any sort of transfers. So that's what we're sitting right now.
What specific courses are offered for the sports major?
Mm-hmm. So right now we're working to build up the curriculum, but right now we have 2 that are dedicated to sports communication. So one is COM 259, and that is called Strategic Communication in Sports. And then the other one is COM 341, which is called Media Society in Sports. Program coordinator Dr. Blaney will be proposing some additional courses, hopefully that'll get on the books for next year. Mm-hmm. And we also have some other comp communication courses that students can take, but that aren't necessarily sports communication courses. And so there are a multitude of courses like that. It just kind of depends on what they want to focus on. So we do have existing courses that have sports comm students in them, but then we also have those dedicated ones.
Can you describe those 2 dedicated ones a little bit for me?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me get the exact description so I can do it for you. Hold on 1 second. Okay, so this one's focused more on kind of how people whose job it is to communicate to the public about whatever part of sports they're in. So we call it strategic communication, which a lot of times is used as public relations.
Okay.
I'll give you an example. We have an alum who works in sports media in Chicago.
Okay.
And so this would be a perfect class for him. So how is it, what are the theories and what are the practices behind how, if you were like a communications director for a sports team, like we have an alum who is the communications director for the Oklahoma City Thunder, for example. And so his job is to make sure that he is communicating externally about the team to media outlets, to within the league, communicating to the people who create, you know, equipment for the team, like anything like that. And so really it's focused on outward communication, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That people might find themselves. That's actually one area. A lot of people, I think, assume that sports communication is just journalism and mass media. So you have people whose job is going to be a TV reporter, a sports broadcaster, play-by-play, which we do. Mm-hmm. But there's also this other area where people are going to be working within the sports industries to be their communication specialists. And so that's something that we're working to make sure that people understand.
Yeah.
So that sports communication does not just look like an extension of what we already do for media, if that makes sense. And then COM 341 is really cool because the title Media Society and Sports is beyond just the broadcast part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about how sometimes we say like isms like racism, sexism, classism, how that kind of stuff appears within sports within our society.
Okay.
And so, like, for example, you know, how is it that the WNBA is portrayed opposite or different from the NBA, you know, or
yes.
how does news coverage, or how do we treat people who maybe identify as LGBTQ for athletes, or how is religion portrayed within sports? When, like, sports figures come out as Christian, right, they talk a lot about, you know, God in their interviews. Like, how is that portrayed? So it's really looking at equity, diversity, inclusion,
and
also how those types of ideals are expressed within our society related to sports, because obviously, you know, sports is a huge part of American society.
Right.
So I love both of those as courses because they are much more focused on kind of getting deeper into what sports is like in our culture and also how we communicate about sports.
Yeah.
And then we'll also have courses. I mean, I know we're also developing courses focused on, you know, Friday night football, you know, and how people and how, you know, sideline reporters do their jobs and how they perform their work. So, I mean, it's a really cool major. I'm very excited about it because it truly spans all of our other existing majors.
Yeah.
So students can double major or they can just, you know, select sports communication, but they're going to be taking a wide array of different types of courses that cover the span of what sports is like in our culture and how we talk about it and report about it. I'm very excited. I think it's very applicable and a lot of students have interest in it.
Can you just describe kind of some of the opportunities that are available for sports comm majors to get involved with?
Students could pretty much get involved in any of our media outlets, you know, because you're with ZND.
Yes.
Even within ZND, you have the people reporting on air. You also have the business office. You know, you have those who select the music and do the work and program and all of that. And so definitely ZND is on top of our list of students who can do lots of different things regardless of their specific major in comm to get on air or to do other parts of it. We also, within School of Comm, also have our TV station.
Right.
We've got the Vedette newspaper, and there's a lot of push for sports on that. There is also, outside of School of Comm, there's Redbird Productions.
Mm-hmm.
We have been talking to Redbird Athletics about how to work together with them for internships and other types of kind of on-site opportunities. I was just in Dr. Hayes's office, who is our associate director and also the faculty advisor for the Public Relations Student Society of America, and they focus on strategic communication. So that would also be a really good fit for sports comm people who might be interested more of like the organizational part of it and not necessarily on air type of stuff. They're going to end up. But there's lots of different organizations within the School of Communication that they can get involved in and also across campus. And we're going to continue to develop more opportunities too, because we really do see this major having a huge potential to attract more students to the school.
Can I just get like your general thoughts and like excitement about the new major?
Absolutely. Yeah. I would say biggest takeaway for me is that there are so many cool opportunities that we can develop from this major. This is our first semester and we have 68 students already in the major. And we only recruited pretty much internally, you know, and we haven't done a big push. And I think that there's a level of excitement because people love sports and they like that there is an opportunity to study communication within that area. I also think that there are so many opportunities for that to cross over into what we already do. So there's, you know, new growth that we have from this major, but also opportunities to elevate what we already do within the School of Communication. And I think once we really start getting the word out even more, then I think that we're going to be in a really good position to attract more students and kind of, you know, show them what we have here, because we have a really cool way for students to get involved and people to learn from who have background in sports. So overall, there's a lot of excitement, I will say, among a lot of the students, for sure. I mean, you might know that, Rear. You know, like, it's like you can do lots of different things. So I like the sports part of it. And not just sports, but any area like that that is more specific, you know? So, like, you could do this in a sports organization, you know? I think it gives students more concrete understanding of how they can use what they're learning and make it more kind of applicable and concrete for them. And I think that's going to help. And I'm excited to see what courses we develop and just kind of how it takes off. I mean, I've not ever been part of a new major before, and I'm excited that I get to see just kind of how this all works and how we can attract students and get them to just take off. I mean, I'm, you know, and we do have really good alumni. We have a lot of alumni, actually, who work in some area of sports.
Yeah.
And so, you know, our internship program is really strong, and it's just going to continue to build. I mean, we have an intern now with Oklahoma City Thunder because of the alumni that we have. So I think the internship program, I think, will even continue to grow. Our numbers will grow. I think the courses we offer will grow. So there's a lot of opportunity for looking forward and just becoming even better than we already are. And that's, I'm excited for that.
So far, students that are enrolled in the major are ISU students, but the university hopes to expand that and build out this new major.
Saturday afternoon, a counter-protest took place at the Bloomington Center for Performing Arts after pro-Nazism flyers began circulating around town. The counter-protest was set up to demonstrate against the controversial flyers. WZND's Colleen Holden attended the event and spoke to Dave Betland with the Prairie Pride Coalition.
Welcome, everybody, and thank you all for turning out today. You know, this is a holiday weekend, and I know it's a busy weekend for a lot of people, but you being here shows that you have the passion and you have the desire to help turn this terrible ship around and to make our country a better place. I am with the Prairie Pride Coalition, and like not in our town, we are celebrating our 30th anniversary as well, and we've been working in the community to make this a more welcoming environment for our LGBTQIA+ citizens and visitors. I want to thank Mike Gizzy and Bloomington Normal 50501, the Bloomington Normal Chapter of Not in Our Town, the Central Illinois Chapter of ACLU, and the Unitarian Universalist Church of Bloomington Normal for organizing and supporting this effort to counter hate, raise awareness, embrace equity, and foster a safer community that embraces its rich diversity. The recent handbill with racist, threatening, and hateful imagery and text, and the individuals who created that flyer seek to silence and erase not only our voices, but our power and the progress achieved on the federal, state, and local levels that has improved equity and opportunities for the LGBTQIA+ community and other minority communities. The fact that a march didn't occur this morning does not negate the fact that through their tactics, this small, infinitesimal group of people seeks to intimidate and silence us. We will not let that happen. In these challenging days, it is difficult to see a light at the end of the tunnel, and in all honesty, there are times when I don't see that light. But there are other times when I know we will come out on the other side of this. Earlier this week, Prairie Pride Coalition sponsored an author who spoke about their experiences chronicling the lives of transgender youth. The people who attended these events came away with knowledge, insight, and empathy around an issue that is too often sensationalized in the media. My friends, these are powerful words. I'm going to repeat them. Knowledge, insight, and empathy. I believe that knowledge leads to insight, which leads to empathy, and I believe that those actions will help lead us to a better future where all are appreciated and respected. I encourage you all to share your stories, listen attentively to others' stories, and realize the power that we have as a collective voice to counter the hate and divisiveness that threatens us on the federal level and here at home. Prairie Pride Coalition and a number of other organizations have information here today, as does a number of other organizations. If you haven't already done so, please stop by the tables. The resources and support available locally are impressive, and even if you already are aware of them, pick up information to share with your friends and your family members who might be feeling marginalized, isolated, and scared. We arm ourselves not with threats and intimidation, but with facts and the truth, that all people in our community should feel safe, welcome, and free to be their authentic selves regardless of race, sexual orientation, gender identity, religion, or immigration status. This is a defining moment in our nation's history, and I hope we can all be part of a response that brings about such an environment not only for us, but for the future generations. Once again, thank you to all the organizers who helped put this together. Thank you all.
The origin of the flyer is unknown, and only those from the counter-protest showed up at the event. We will be right back with more stories for Second Look.
News now on 103.3 WZND.
WZND's Red Zone team spoke with Dave Murek from the franchise ahead of the ISU versus Oklahoma University football matchup.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this matchup. As we mentioned in the previous segment, it's very exciting when ISU gets the chance to play an FBS program. Last year we got to play Iowa. Now we get our first opportunity in program history to meet with the Oklahoma Sooners. So I'm really excited for this matchup. And really quick, Dave, I just want to ask, like you talked about a little bit, but how would you rate just the overall experience in Norman right now for this opening week?
Yeah, you know, it's different. That's a good question. I followed Oklahoma a long time. There's more anticipation for this season opener. You know, given the fact it's not a opponent like Notre Dame or Ohio State or Miami, I haven't seen the Oklahoma fan base this jazzed just to get out and watch football in a long time. I think it goes to how many unknowns there are with Oklahoma this year. They lost to Navy in a bowl game. To finish off a losing season, something that fans around here just aren't used to seeing. The mood, the vibe with OU football was not good. And a lot of talk about, you know, do you keep Brent Venables? Do you make a move? The administration said, no, we're going to keep him, but we're going to give him all the help we can. They bring in Ben Arbuckle from Washington State. He brings his quarterback with John Mateer. They get Jaden Ott, one of the best running backs in the country from Cal. And all of a sudden in the offseason, it went from, you know, this doom and gloom to kind of optimistic and hope. And the more we get closer to kickoff, a lot of national experts are starting to kind of have Oklahoma sneaking around that 12-team playoff mark. So there's just so many unknowns. The expectation, I think, is surprisingly high from where it was when the season ended. And Norman is a buzz. They are ready for kickoff, I'll tell you that.
That kind of leads into my first question for you, Dave. So you talked about a lot of the new additions to the Oklahoma team. And, I mean, this is a team I would definitely say won in the offseason. They got a lot of guys that the fans are liking. And if you can tell a little bit, what can the ISU fans expect to see from this John Mateer-led offense come Saturday?
That's a great question. I'm right there with him waiting to see. I mean, we watched what he did at Washington State, right? And there was a guy around here for a long time named Lincoln Riley, and a lot of the concepts you'll see are the same. They run a lot of the same route tree stuff, making the first and second read easy on the quarterbacks. That's why John Mateer had a great year. A lot of the same zone rushing concepts. The GT, you know, counter is going to be featured, I think, quite a bit against Illinois State. But they're kind of in this spot. They got Michigan, the Wolverines, rolling to town next week. So it's kind of like how much do you want to open the playbook week one? I think they need to open this thing, crack it open, let Mateer get some rhythm with these wide receivers. It's a very deep group at the wideout spot, just unproven. Deion Burks, probably the leading returner coming back. The problem was he was hurt all season last year. Everybody thinks he's insanely talented, but we haven't seen it in an Oklahoma uniform. So I think you're going to see John Mateer and Ben Arbuckle really try to get out and sling the ball around the yard. I mean, if it goes into the half, you know, at a decent score for Oklahoma, I don't think they're going to care. I think they're going to roll their starters right back out and try to get this thing off and running early, because the schedule does not get easier, you know, after you guys.
Dave, Connor Allen here. I was wondering, this defensive unit, we obviously know Brent Venables is a defensive guy. You have guys like Marvin Jones Jr. up front, Mason Taylor on the line. So what are you expecting from this front seven this upcoming season?
Yeah, I mean, look, the front seven for Oklahoma is being called the best in the SEC. And when you're that, typically you're one of the best in the country. I see enough there just with the inside rotation of Grayson Halton, Jaden Jackson, a freshman All-American last year. You got David Stone, a five-star that came in last year, didn't really like the entire thing around playing football, like practice and going to school. From all accounts, he's straightened that up and has become a monster on the inside to go with Demonic Williams, a very good SEC defensive tackle. That rotation alone sets Oklahoma apart in my eyes. That is a very stout interior defensive line, and the problem opponents are going to have, it gets better on the outside. You just said it. Marvin Jones comes down from Tallahassee, five sacks a season ago. Or Mason Thomas back. He's going to be an NFL first-round draft pick. Guys behind him, Danny Okoye, P.J. Adebore, another five-star, 6'4", 260-pound athletic freak. I mean, this defensive front has guys they can throw at you for days. And I'm not just talking about bodies for depth. I'm talking about legit day one NFL talent. So I definitely see where the hype is, and that is where my attention is going to be all day Saturday watching that Oklahoma defense.
Redbirds lost 35-3 against the Boomers on Saturday. Next week, Redbird football returns to normal for their first home game of the year on September 6th at 6 p.m.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Second Look. Today we talked about Clover's Cat Club's event with Bob's Bay Books, the College of Engineering, and ISU football. For Second Look, I'm Caitlin Wittes.
And I'm Rachel Deerfield. Have a wonderful rest of your Labor Day weekend, everyone.
This has been WZND's Second Look. Catch more WZND in-depth news every Sunday at noon with WZND's Bird's Eye View and Second Look. For more WZND news, find us online at WZND.com.